Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, hello. I am Deb Karen, owner of Anahata Marketing and host of Culture Crush RX, where we explore what makes great company culture and discuss how business leaders can maximize their success by fostering happy, healthy, peak-performing teams and ensuring that everyone is aligned with the company mission. So I have two fabulous ladies in studio with me today. We were already chatting off air, and I can tell it's going to be a fun conversation. But today we're going to talk specifically about creating a culture of inclusion in organizations. So I have Melissa Lampson, CEO of Lampson Consulting. And she's an author, a facilitator, a coach who has worked with. You have a really impressive client roster. I noticed there's LinkedIn, SpaceX, IKEA, Porsche, MTV, all kinds of things on your client list. So that's impressive for sure. And then I also have Kate Rogers, who is the CEO of CoVibe, an agency that partners with founders, co-founders, and CEOs to build their companies with a people-first mindset. So this is going to be a really cool conversation. I'm very excited. And I didn't give you guys this heads up, but I always start with what was your first job? So if you want to give any further background on who you are in your company that I didn't touch on, and then let us know where you got your start in the working world. Melissa, do you want to go first?
Wow, my first job. You mean like first job as a teenager?
Anything.
Like
any... The first thing you did that made you money. Oh, God.
I was actually a chambermaid for kind of an upscale inn.
Ooh.
And that was really weird because... You know, a lot of people make fun of me about that. They're like, really? You like clean bathrooms and stuff? I'll tell you, I can clean a bathroom so beautifully today. So that was like great experience to have.
Yeah.
I think I was 15 or something like that.
That builds character, I think. Those hardworking jobs when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
For sure.
I have a few bathrooms. You can come over.
Yeah.
I'm really good at it.
Yeah. We'll circle back with contact information. Yeah.
That's right.
Awesome. And then give us a little bit more about your consulting firm, your many books that you've written.
Oh, sure. Gosh, where do I start? So I've been doing leadership and management development, and especially in the diversity and cross-cultural space now for over 20 years. So I help leaders and individuals develop a global mindset. The latest book that I've just written is called The New Global Manager, Learning to Manage in a Complex Business Environment. It just came out in September. I'm really proud of it because it's a good book. And the reason why it's good, not just because of me, because I interviewed a lot of leaders, business leaders who have learned a lot of things trying to kind of wing it, and then finally being able to ensure that they're able to take their sort of local management skills, if you will, and take them global.
Awesome.
So it's been, it was really fun writing the book and interviewing.
That's really cool. Is it available on Amazon? Or
it is. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
People can
audio version
that.
And all
that.
Very cool.
Did you record it yourself?
In Kindle. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
yeah. It was actually really fun.
Yeah. That's for some reason something I've always wanted to do, record an audio book. So I don't know. Someday I'll do that too. Maybe I have to write one first.
Yeah, or you can do my next one if you want.
There you go. All right. And Kate, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then what was your first job?
Okay. After babysitting, it was a bus person at Applebee's.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, and I did that all through high school. My actual first, like, real job, though, that I felt like I got an understanding of culture, I was an interior designer right out of college for a number of years in Boston, and I got to experience a lot of, some situations where I just pinched myself, like, at Saudi Arabian sheiks, and I did the Newport Film Festival opening for Anna Gabriel's film, and Peter Gabriel was there with his family, and I still, like, there was no phones. I couldn't take pictures at that point, but it is cemented in my brain.
That's really cool.
I worked at Vistaprint, PIPO, as a recruiting assistant. That was the first culture that really got me thinking about culture.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that was 2005.
Okay. And I'm now the CEO of CoVibe.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that.
What I do is I work with CEOs and co-founders to help them build a company that is authentic, that aligns with what their mission is, and empowers their employees to be the best versions of themselves. Most of the time, my work looks like, in my mind, it's very simple. I'm a mirror. And I help people see things that they can't see themselves. And that's just a gift that I think we all need in our lives. And sometimes it's our friends, and sometimes you know, we bring in outside resources.
Yeah.
And then, of course, organizational development. And we just really take a strategic approach to the mission and of the business and make it a reality.
Okay. And you come in and you work with folks when they're in the startup phase?
Startup phase, I work up to about 300 employees. Oh, after okay. that, you know, it gets bigger, you know, mm-hmm. than me and my team really do. Right. But I do it, yeah. especially if mm-hmm. if it's a shorter engagement or whatever. But
awesome.
The reason why I prefer the smaller companies is because, you know, my brain's happier in the hackier mm-hmm. space, and yeah. and I like to build. I stay up all night long thinking about it, and, yeah. and it's just where I thrive and I enjoy the most, and I feel like the passion that is intuitive to that stage of business is mm-hmm. just makes it just the funnest, yeah. you know, so.
It's good. You have to tune into mm-hmm. where you're going to do your best work, mm-hmm. right?
Right. And,
I mean, if that fires you up, then that's yeah. definitely where you need to be.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I just kind of had an epiphany about our way of collaborating too, in that, you know, really 300 employees is kind of the mark where they invite me to come in yeah. and do some kind of management or leadership development, because that's yeah. when they're starting to think about succession
yes.
planning.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. That,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. Very frequently, companies very early stage will ask me to help them. And then there's a point where I'm like, oh, I need to
hand you off.
And then,
Next level.
Yeah. And then they turn into SpaceX yeah. or something. And Melissa yeah. helps them, right?
No, but that is interesting, because I kind of had that as something I did want to touch on, as far mm-hmm. as when we're talking about culture. It is a different animal when your team mm-hmm. starts to grow, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we were talking off air before this, but yeah, I mean, I personally, like, I'm with you, Kate. Like, I love, like, because it's my experience, is little mm-hmm. tiny teams. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed in my own personal experience how much when you've got a small team, one person can really throw the balance off. Mm-hmm. But then when you've got a large team, there's a whole different strategy that I'm sure you'll let us know about, Melissa. Mm-hmm. But like keeping that yep. intact when you've got right. so many players is something very different.
Right. And when companies have really strong cultures, company cultures, they may or may not be intentional, right? It's just because the leaders or the
happens.
Way that they operate,
yeah.
right? And then how do you, if you want to keep that culture or try to develop that culture in a certain way, how do you maintain that, right, with growth?
Yes.
And so there's companies like LinkedIn, I think, did a phenomenal job mm-hmm. with it, because they really live and breathe and talk about their cultural values like all the time inside. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting to see how you can incorporate that into management or leadership development and have people just really digest it as part of the way they're operating, or the way right. they're solving problems, or the way they're giving feedback.
Right.
It's just interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like also, I'm also co-lead of Phoenix Startup Week, and get asked a lot about, oh, is this just an event for startups? And I think that I'm not interested in defining what a startup is or what an entrepreneur is.
Right.
I think that it's kind of like the hot, cool, sexy thing to be an entrepreneur or be in a startup. Mm-hmm. But I do know, to Melissa's point, companies that are several thousand that operate in a startup-like
right.
mentality.
Right.
And it's very, very successful. You can be two guys in a garage, or you can be, you know, WebPT or right. LinkedIn, or, you know, one of those companies. And it feels the same. And mm-hmm. and that just sort of speaks to authenticity in their culture. They have decided that that's the culture that they align to, and they hire the talent
yes.
and make decisions and have communication infrastructures that support it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the key too, is that mm-hmm. you have to be aware of that culture. We just mm-hmm. touched on that. But there mm-hmm. are companies that kind of accidentally create one. And if it's created for you, it's not going to be the same thing as something that you intentionally create. And
well, it probably just won't be that healthy.
Right. mm-hmm. Right. You're taking mm-hmm. a chance for sure. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about specifically the culture of inclusive leadership. Can you explain more, Melissa, about what that means to you?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of research on inclusive leadership, because it's been sort of the buzzword that people have been using lately. And although I've always been, I guess I would say, a diversity and inclusion expert, quote unquote, but this idea of how do we just make people feel engaged and motivated and connected and dialed into our mission, to what we're trying to do, to our products, to our services, right, to each other, to the teams we're working in. And I guess there's been so much, sadly, there's been so much research that has shown how disengaged or unengaged or whatever people are in with some of the Gallup polls and so forth that
yeah.
have been done. And it's just like, ah, bummer. So I think that this concept of inclusion is really broad, but I think it's, from what I've
kind of deduced from what I've read and researched, as I see and anecdotally heard, it really boils down to communicating. So how can we give effective feedback? How mm-hmm. can we listen and ask? I call them coaching skills mm-hmm. well, so that we can make sure that we really understand, where are people coming from? What do they want? What do they need?
Right. Know,
what are their motivators?
Right.
To
right.
be there.
Yeah. And I think, I think you mentioned, or somewhere in, maybe when I was perusing your website, there's some specific factors that contribute to being successful in that endeavor. So you have to have some empathy, right? Mm-hmm. Which some people really don't have.
Yes.
Some people really have to work at that. And compassion. And then what was the other? Vulnerability, I think, is a big one. We've mm-hmm. got Brene Brown is kind of out mm-hmm. there really mm-hmm. pushing that one. I still need to read Dare to Lead. But I think those are relatively new terms, almost buzzwordy now, right, in this space, but they really are important
things.
Well,
that's right. Well, as it more and more gets automated and we don't need to be as mechanical or tactical in what we're doing in our jobs, what do we have left? I mean,
we have to be human,
right? Yeah. It's all about compassion and empathy.
Yeah.
Right?
I think Simon Sinek says often that as we get more connected to devices, it's more important that we remember the power of connection to the between human.
Yeah.
I feel that inclusion in leadership comes down to knowing yourself, knowing your story, this whole idea of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you really know your story and you own it, you know, the things that could be perceived good or bad, whether you have judgment around it at all mm-hmm. Or not, then you allow other people, you can create a space for other people to be authentic.
Yes.
And those are the type of relationships and rapports that create safe space
yes.
for learning, mm-hmm. for development, for engagement, for right. making mistakes,
right.
for candid conversations.
Right.
And if you think back, I mean, I would challenge everybody to think about your favorite boss or the boss that you, your favorite boss and the boss that you grew the most under may or may not be the same person. But if you think about the type of dynamic you had with them, it was they pushed you, they encouraged you, they unlocked you, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's mainly because, in my opinion, they know themselves.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. they know what they have to offer and they know what they don't.
Yeah. That's really good. And I think from, you know, taking that even a step further, when you do allow people to, you know, not be afraid to take risks, not be afraid to make suggestions, be a little bit vulnerable, then you breed more creativity, right? Mm-hmm. More innovation, mm-hmm. which in today's world, that's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
If your company, I mean, everything moves so fast. So no yeah, matter what your right. business is, for the most part, I can't really think of an example where that wouldn't matter.
Yeah. A management hack that I was just talking to somebody about the other day was, so many managers, I feel, are people, when they get into a leadership position, they don't have the training and development. They don't understand their own personal leadership style or even their story. And so what happens? They turn into sort of this hierarchical, like, leader, very mm-hmm. top down, you know, very controlling. And they sort of squeeze the life out of the team, mm-hmm. right? And so I was talking to this one manager that was new to management and was just really screwing it up. And I said, what would it look like if you just said to your employees when they had an idea, yeah, show me how.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah, show me how. And they'll go home and you say, like, look, you got to get all your work done, but sure, show me how. Here's the constraints. And they're going to spend their weekend or their night or whatever trying to figure it out. They're going to reach the same conclusion that you have mm-hmm. if you're dialed in. And
right.
if they have a creative resource or solution around it, then great.
Right.
You know, and then you've just empowered them and you've made yeah. them feel seen and heard. And I right. feel that as a manager, seeing and hearing your employees for who they are is like one of the most important things you do in your day.
Yeah. That's huge. So when you're working with leaders, and either one of you can answer this, if they do need to work on that as a skill, like, what are the specific strategies that you employ to help train them to be that way, you know, or to work toward that?
Becoming more inclusive.
Becoming more inclusive and yeah.
Just understanding self. Yeah.
Yeah, really both. But I think, yeah, that understanding self part. And to me, when you mentioned that, you know, they get into that leadership role and all of a sudden they're just kind of almost like a little militant. Like, it almost sounds like insecurity to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it right. is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like so many people, when they get into a leadership position, it's like, I've made it. I'm mm-hmm. going to make the fridge now and people are going to
be proud
of me.
Or they have that imposter syndrome.
Right. Exactly. They don't know what to do with it. And then, of course, once they've made it, and I'm using air quotes here, they can't mm-hmm. screw it up.
Right.
Right.
Right. Like, what if I screw it up? Then is it the end of my career? And there's just so right. much pressure, right? Instead of just saying, like, I'm just a human being and I'm the same person I was yesterday. I just have a different title today.
Yeah.
And I got to figure this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's incredible because with the programs we did for SpaceX and LinkedIn and so forth, one of the first module we actually developed for them is called Managing Self. So we ask them questions like, what kind of, you know, what do you want to be known for as a leader or manager, right? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And let's mm-hmm. define that. And yeah. and that really helps people kind of visualize their own value and culture that they're bringing, but also kind of their brand, right? Yeah. Establishing the brand within the organization. And so that's kind of interesting. And then when we get into module 2, we're talking about managing others. And then we teach them how to give effective feedback, right? Especially right. when it's critical feedback, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really important because mm-hmm. that's where people, I think, have the most fear around is how right. do you right, tell people that they're not doing what they need to be doing? Or
right. how can I tell them and they'll still like me?
That's right. right. Yeah. That's right. And then coaching skills, I think, to your point, Kate, is really about how do I just ask, right? To say, look, I don't know how to do that. What do you think?
Right.
Or what would it look like if you know if you solve the issue?
And that goes back to that vulnerability. Because I think once somebody's given people. That title yeah. of leader, they don't many times, I mean, not everybody obviously, right? But to say, I don't know
yeah. mm-hmm.
is just hugely fair. Like that's, yeah. I can't say well, I don't know.
Yeah, and historically organizations have rewarded you for coming up with, you know, solutions, right? And having answers. And right. so we're so programmed at, well, I have to answer, I have to solve. And it might be that maybe we need to sit with this dysfunction for a minute, or maybe we need to sit yeah. with the problem for a minute and yeah. see if other people have ideas or it comes to us eventually, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes back to the idea of vulnerability. Yeah. Sure.
I think a lot of the insecurity comes from a lack of confidence in feeling and an understanding of what is expected of them and how to deliver on that, right? So then they are... And I've done this myself of getting into a sort of head trash yeah. about if I
love that expression.
If I don't have the answer to this, it says something about me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I don't come down hard on this person for this perceived infraction, it says something about me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually. Right. That's all in your head.
It's ego.
So yeah. like. Can, you know, sifting through that and what's the truth that's serving you and what's the truth that not. And it sort of all comes down to a very similar exercise that we would do with companies to establish what an authentic culture is. You do the same thing with yourself, mm-hmm. right? You know, what's your end game here? Like, right. what do you want to be known for?
Well, that's what you want to be known for as a leader.
Yeah, exactly what yeah. Melissa was saying. Yeah. So you have your own internal mission. You have your own set of values. And so does the company.
There's quite a few people that have never actually
yeah,
thought that through.
I have so yeah, often.
Right. Amazing.
I have so yeah. often yeah. had given feedback to people that have just made very large mistakes. And I'm like, what is your end game? Are you right. thinking through right. past the week?
Right.
right? Like you
right.
have to work with these people again, you yeah. know?
Have you, you know, when you've done that with leaders, because, you know, especially because you're working with some high level leaders, I'm sure when you're talking about the level of company like LinkedIn mm-hmm. and SpaceX, when they say to you, when you're telling you, what is your brand? What is it you want to be known for? Have you ever had somebody answer that question and you've just been like, holy cow, you're so off base?
Of course.
You know, with yeah. what they think they're projecting and what they're actually projecting.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
yeah.
I have. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
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 And yeah, then kind of. Yeah.
So there must be some things like, is it, you know, typically, I guess you would want to say whatever they think they want to be known for, hopefully is something positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you guess, I guess, have to reverse engineer and work with them. Okay, well, you got some incongruence here. So we're going to go back to the drawing
yeah,
board and try to fix that.
I feel like it's just a really interesting perspective and position to be in, because sometimes as the leader of a company, your personal brand gets too mixed into the company brand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so then the exercise is, let me show you how that's not actually serving your employees. It might serve you, but mm-hmm. it doesn't serve your employees. And what's the end goal here? Engagement, right? Mm-hmm. So we are going to have to dial this back. Or why don't we do an exercise with more people and get more feedback? And then you can see how you're the outlier. And then
right.
what do we want to do about that?
Well, that's a great point, because it really comes down to then inclusion. Because if your brand is so strong in terms of being a driver personality and you're type A mm-hmm. and you email around the clock and or whatever it is, you know, that you stand for, that you are, and the company starts to operate that way, but that's not necessarily the way everyone wants to work, or, you know, other
right.
people need more flex time or want to work a little slower or work less intensively, or maybe they want to work more intensively, whatever. But then that really makes a strong impact on the organization if the leader doesn't see mm-hmm. that their own personality style, right, or their own work style is really having that kind of influence, because that doesn't allow for any innovation or diversity or inclusion.
Right.
It's actually, I feel, fairly common to a degree, because the larger the company gets, mm-hmm. the more separated a lot of the leadership team happen or are from the body of the company.
Yeah.
So very frequently, I would say more than 50%, maybe even more than 60% of the time, you go in and talk to the management team and they're like, this is the culture, this is the company, this is mm-hmm. what we stand for, this is where we're going. And then I'm like, okay, cool, got it. And then I get to go talk to the line managers and everybody underneath them. And it's completely different.
Right.
That happens all the time. That's usually why they've called me. Because they feel the inequity.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do
about
it.
They're dysfunctional, but they don't even realize why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
I personally think that having strong culture and missions and values in all aspects of your life is like, you know, who doesn't need a North Star, right? So even in my family, my little guy, I got a 5-year-old. And our values in our family is we stand for kindness and love, mm-hmm. and we're a man of our word. And so if anything happens in the day, I'll just say, what do we stand for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he's like, kindness and love. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing? He's like, no.
Right.
Okay. I get it.
Right.
So the culture and the values are guardrails. It's so that we know, like without a shadow of a doubt, the difference between right and wrong.
Right.
And it makes us able to work and be creative and in a faster pace, in a safer pace.
Right.
And I think the results that come out of that is hands down more efficient and more effective than in lack of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So Melissa, I want to kind of touch on, because you mentioned you've been doing this kind of work for 20 years. So 20 years ago, I feel like it was probably a little more revolutionary to talk about diversity and inclusion. Or I know it, like, right now, it's a very, very hot topic. Like, we're all talking about this in all aspects, not just in work, in like our entire culture, we're talking about this. But what differences do you see from 20 years ago in the workplace versus today when you talk about inclusion and diversity?
Yeah. Oh, such a big question.
Yeah, it is a big one.
So interesting. And I have so many answers.
Yeah.
Well, to stay positive around that, because I think it's really important that we look at the progress we've made and we're making. What's been interesting to see is how much more diverse individuals are, right?
Right.
And so we're not only looking at gender, culture, ethnicity, sort of like from just unilaterally, we're looking at really what's the multiplicity within me, right?
Right.
How am I, you know, maybe I'm from two different cultural backgrounds, or I speak four different languages, or, you know, I'm questioning, you know, or I see myself as they, I don't see myself as he or she, or, you know, so there's just a lot more fluidity in terms of diversity and in terms of individuals,
right?
So it's, I would say we go into organizations and we talk less about cultural sensitivity, but we talk more about diversity and inclusion as a whole,
right?
So then we include work style and we include personal preferences and personality styles and all of that. And I think
there's so many more boxes now.
That's right.
Yeah.
right. If the boxes are, you know,
they're not even boxes.
Not even boxes.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, supposedly.
Right.
Theoretically. But then it's interesting because sometimes in doing that, organizations will kind of forget that there's still a need for women to get together and have a conversation about what's unique about what we can offer and bring to the table.
Right.
Right. As business people, as leaders, whatever, as individual contributors. And then also, of course, men too, but women still being paid a little bit less and being a little bit less in leadership positions and so forth. So they kind of still forget a little bit that they need to go to some of those groups, which we traditionally would call minority groups, that I would probably not necessarily use that term today, but those maybe marginalized groups or groups that have traditionally had less access to resources or less access to power in organizations. You know, how do we still deal with those issues specifically without, you know, excluding everybody else?
It kind
from
of
that
is
conversation.
It's a fine line. It's a little bit of a slippery slope, because you're saying we all want to be the same.
Right.
But we still have these things that, you know, we want to categorize people by in some way.
Right. Or we can actually leverage, because they are differences that they bring that are positive, right? You know, whether it's skills around compassion and empathy, you know, the trends show that, or that the research shows that women tend to be more apt to being socialized, to be more compassionate and empathize more. That doesn't necessarily mean that, of course, that men aren't good at empathy and compassion.
Right. I want to have this conversation again in 20 more years.
Yeah, yeah,
we'll see how much that has changed, because I think boys today are being raised very, very
differently. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's
And girls, but that's our children.
And you see a difference in the millennials, like you were saying earlier too.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that's why they're hiring a lot of saleswomen who's salespeople, global salespeople, because they feel like they can adapt and read and kind of deal with situations a little bit more intricately when they're working globally. Yeah. Things like that, it's happening today. But
yeah,
but still, I mean, to the point of inclusion, I think we need to understand the specific differences, but then also find a way to, you know, bring them together in an organization so we can use them well, right?
Yeah.
So it's to the health and the benefit of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had a little thought. I'm not even sure if I'm going to formulate this question very well, but given that you're talking about global companies and, you know, there's things that are going to be different in other countries. And if you launch your company here in the US and you have a certain kind of culture, but now you're going over and you want to branch in Dubai or, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to some other international city, how do you balance, you know, like that there may be some things that have to be different in a different city,
totally.
Right? So how do you keep your mm-hmm. company culture, but acknowledge the nuances of another location? Do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different things. So it's interesting because some companies will say company culture and how we've defined that will supersede national culture. And some companies have been very successful with that. So that means if passion, for example, is not a comfortable word in English. Okay, let's say we're doing business in English because it's mostly the case even globally, right?
Right.
If we're a global corporation. The word passion might be a value that comes out of Canada or the US, mm-hmm. right? In terms of how you want to be as an employee, passionate about your work. For in Asia, that might sound really silly or really weird or really strange, right? Or in Europe, it might sound kind of superficial or like, hey, passion is reserved for like personal relationships.
Yeah.
It's not in the work. But it's whether the employees decide they're going to buy into that is passion is something that I'm going to commit to globally because that's what the organization is saying, right?
Right.
And I'm bought into that. Or it might be, and I've seen the other, and it also works successfully, we're going to develop our own culture and values in each location. And as long as we're still part of the overall mission or the overall aligned with the company goals,
right,
with the product, services, et cetera, then it doesn't really matter whether in Europe we're saying that, you know, integrity is our value,
right,
that we're going to espouse. And then in the US, perhaps it's, you know, something else.
Right.
So that's interesting. But then to your question about working globally, I mean, in my book, I present two models. So one model is called OR, and it's observe, ask questions or ask, and then react. So I just try to give it like sort of a user-friendly tool, if you will, or method, so that when people go into situations that are uncomfortable for them, where all of a sudden they're sitting on big, long couches and they're being served tea and they're like, wait, are we going to start negotiating yet? And they realize they have to have 2 hours of tea before and develop and chit chat before they can get into a negotiation in Dubai or some other country, right, that is will use that practice in business, that they can kind of step back and say, wait, let me observe. Let me ask some questions like, so are we going to drink tea for a little while or how long or when can we get to negotiating?
Right.
And then react to that appropriately because sometimes we react too quickly and then that's what makes us, you know, falter or not able to develop those business relationships or trust.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you just said basically that both styles would work, whether you're saying like, this is our company culture and we're sticking to it, or we're going to acknowledge that when we go to other places, we have to work with the people that are there. Mm-hmm. If you're advising a company that is newly expanding into a new place, do you tend to steer them in one direction or the other?
I like that they would go. I think it's good to try to create some consistency within the different locations so that they go in and say, hey, you know, we're looking at creating a global culture now because mm-hmm. we're expanding. Can you help us with that?
Mm-hmm.
What should be our values? What should be our way of moving forward now that we've kind of developed this new entity?
Yeah.
I think a collaborative approach is good. It's confusing for people sometimes because especially those from cultures that are used to having a more authoritarian kind of environment, that if you're sort of this collaborative, you know, low hierarchy culture going, you know, expanding abroad, it's going to be a little awkward because some, you know, people perhaps, for example, in India, they'll kind of say, okay, why are you asking me for my opinion or why are you asking me? Just tell me what you want me to do. You know,
right.
That makes me feel safe. That makes me feel comfortable. I'm used to that.
Right.
But then once you sort of educate them, well, this is what we're trying to do and this is why collaboration is important and this is why we think this is good for the organization, then it's like, wow, that's really cool. Like I could adopt this kind of new way of operating and I feel really empowered to be part of this organization. But it's a shift for them because it may not necessarily be typical in their cultural environment.
Right. Yeah. And when I think if you talk about hiring for culture first, which is something that I hear a lot of people, obviously these days, it's almost like most people are looking at culture fit first. But if you're going into a country where that's just typically not their culture, then finding the employees
is
tricky.
Take that into account. That's a great point, Deb. Yeah. Because you may not find the employees that are all collaborative and responsive and giving you all these answers until you let them know that that's what you're expecting.
Right.
And then people feel safe or open to be able to express that.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I think there's some similarities between expanding globally and then just having general distributed teams.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of startups that would have a small office in New York, San Francisco, whatever. And the offices will have a concentration of different types of employees. It's mm-hmm. very common, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the sales office is in New York. Maybe the engineers are in San Francisco. So there will be, some kind of, commonality between them, but it will also be different because mm-hmm. they're different people. And so I think it's similar. And I think there's also a challenge between when you hire an employee that has, let's just say, worked at a large conglomerate for 5 or 10 years, and then they go to a startup, which is, kind of just like get stuff done and get it done quickly and mm-hmm. don't ask questions and fail fast. And, and they're used to, the 3-year business plan that tells them every day which part of the project they're supposed to be working on. I as you were talking, I was thinking about use cases that it's like, no, you don't have to ask permission. You just do it.
Yeah.
Just go do it.
Right.
And, and they it's a similar training, experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we touched on the difference between the size of teams, but I think the larger the company, the more chance you have of those little pockets of culture mm-hmm. variations, mm-hmm. which will crop up, naturally, right? I mean, some mm-hmm. of that just happens because engineers are different types of people than salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. They're going to have a different culture within their department than the sales department does.
And not everybody wants to be entrepreneurial and are they built
that
way,
right? That's right.
There are plenty of people that are like, just tell me what success looks like and I'll do it.
Yeah. Task doers.
Right?
But we need all of those
we
in
need
every
all of
company,
them.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you need the people that can, that just want to be tactical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it depends on the business, of course.
Well, to be fair, too, that's what the education system is in many countries. So in mm-hmm. China, it's all about, take this information and this is what, and then regurgitate it back in exams, and that's how you'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't a lot of room for sort of free thinking or essay questions or
right.
creative thought in that.
Right.
So that's, if that's bred into you, through university, it's hard to then get into an organization and all of a sudden be like, okay, so tell me what you think. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. I've never been able to think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But that's a muscle that needs to be exercised
that's
just
right.
like anything else. So
it's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And finding that in people so that you can allow them to mm-hmm. try it.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm sure it is exciting for some, and for others they're like, this is not for me,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I also want to talk, we've touched on it for sure, about gender balance, because, this is just kind of a big thing right now in the whole Me Too movement and how that has shifted the workplace. So you have some programs where you specifically help women with trying to advance in their careers or get past those internal and external barriers. Can you tell us a little bit about that stuff that you offer?
Yeah, sure. So the program is typically called, and sometimes we change it up a little, Networking and Advancement Strategies for Women. And it's really about, a lot of organizations today are trying to remove sort of systemic barriers, if you will. So mm-hmm. they're, removing the glass ceiling,
mm-hmm.
right, which still kind of exists. So they're equalizing pay scales and they're making sure that, women, the job descriptions are also appealing to women. That's a big thing where a lot of women will shy away from applying for management and leadership positions because they'll have like 10 qualifications that they're asking for. And then women will say, wow, I only have 9 or I only have 8. I probably shouldn't even apply because
right.
I'm not good enough.
Oh, my gosh. And you think a man just goes, I have most of these. I'm in.
They,
oh,
I
100%.
Actually,
yeah.
And I actually do workshops with men and they directly tell me that too. And they'll say, oh, yeah, if I have like 4 or 5, I just call the hiring manager and be like, hey, can we fit the job to me? Or maybe I'll just try it. And the attitude too is that, and this is also unfortunate, but like women are still sort of promoted based on achievement and men are promoted based on potential.
Uh-huh.
So men look at that as potential. And so mm-hmm. it's even hurting women because if they apply for a job that they're already qualified for, where they are 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 qualifications, or maybe even 11 out of 10, that the hiring manager, if they're a man, they'll look and they'll be like, why are you applying for this job? You can already do it. But as women, we're so programmed to be, there's a lot of perfectionism and a lot, and we're so self-critical. A lot of times we really want to make sure that we're correct and that we're good at this and we're going to be able to do a good job. And so we won't necessarily take that risk to go into a job where we have to learn four or five things to become.
Isn't that hilarious? I just had like a light bulb moment when you're like, why would you? Well, yeah, don't I have to be able to do it to apply for it?
Yep. Right. That's right.
But no, that's not true.
That's right. And it actually hurts us because they're saying, wait, why are you applying for this job? And then they're like, well, maybe she's not really that good. Maybe she doesn't really have all those 10 qualifications.
Right.
Or maybe she's lazy.
Right.
She's just looking to be complacent.
Right.
That happens too.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
the men look at it through that lens is really interesting.
Yeah. So for women, you help them with seeing that.
That's right. So there's tons of kind of aha things like that. But the workshop consists of networking skills. How do I target network? So we typically, as women, network with people we like. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, I thought she was really cool. I really was happy to meet, or he was really neat. I want to meet, but
because we're feelers,
right? Yeah. And coming back to the empathy, compassion piece, right? So if we get better at targeting who we want to network with, because it's good for our career, and we get over the feeling of that's icky somehow, right? Because there's a lot of kind of icky thing in networking and self-promotion. Self-promotion's another module in it, right?
Because it feels self-serving,
right? It feels self-serving.
Yeah.
And what I say is, I'm like, who's self-promotion good for? Well, me? No, it's actually good for your manager, your manager's manager, your team, your peers. Because if you are seen for your achievements and qualifications, obviously you didn't do it alone, right? So then your manager, it makes your manager look good. It makes your manager look good. It makes your team look good. And so all of a sudden you start to go, oh, self-promotion's good for the whole organization.
Right.
So I should be doing more of this.
Right.
So self-promotion, networking, and then communication between men and women. And I share different ways that men and women are different. There are basically five.
Yeah.
That I focus on.
So I kind of want to circle back to that idea of diversity. Now we were talking about, because this is always like, I feel like now we're trending in like delicate territory, because now we're saying, you know, genders, men versus women. And that's been a conversation recently where there's like, it's not just a binary definition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't even know what kind of question I'm asking right now, but how does that play in now when you're trying to balance all of that?
I mean, you just kind of point to the research. You just say, well, you know, how many women do you have in your leadership team? I mean, I just recently worked for a client where this guy actually hired me to come in and teach advancement strategies for women. And these women were maybe 2 and 3 layers below him. And then we had a conversation and it turned out he has no women reporting to him. I was like, wait, you have no women in your peer team. You have no women reporting to you, but yet he still sees a need to bring women through the organization. It's like, well, why don't you just promote a couple women into the team?
Yeah.
Right. So you have to look at the numbers and just point to that and say, look, there is an issue. Mm-hmm. Now, what the issue is, let's get to the bottom of it and figure it out. But it's true. There is pushback on that. Like, do we do separate workshops for men and women? Is that really relevant? Should we have people come together and talk about it? Should we just talk about inclusion generally for the organization?
Right.
It's really tricky.
It becomes so touchy.
And women themselves.
Right.
Right. They don't want to be like, quote unquote, targeted. Like, I don't need to be helped for my advancement. Right. Women can feel kind of like, why am I being picked for this? Or
there's resistance to that.
Sure. And I understand
that. I mean, I think you have to talk in some level of generalities, right? I mean, in some cases we have to kind of.
Of course.
You know, I mean, of course there's exceptions to everything. There's probably plenty of women who have looked at a job description and been like, I got 3 of these. I'm going to apply for it. And I think, I mean, we can take it from that aspect of, you know, we all kind of have masculine and feminine essences within us.
Exactly. It
doesn't necessarily matter what your external presentation is. Like, you're showing up in some way representing one of those two things.
Yes.
You know, and how you perceive the world, I think, is affected by that. So
you're totally right.
Yeah.
I think the tricky thing about the inclusion and diversity conversation is, and I see this happen very frequently in companies, is it turns into affirmative action instead of it being like, you know, and you know, I'm sure, Melissa, you've had this experience too, where people will hire you just because you're a woman, and they usually put you in human resources or some kind of administrative function. And then, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in the boardroom and they say, oh, where's the coffee? I thought this was going to be catered. And they look at me and I'm like, you know, you hungry?
Yeah.
Go get a sandwich. Like, you know, and why are you looking at me? And I think it's just it's a deeper cultural education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we're getting there. I mean, I do feel that there's a lot of stuff bubbling up right now. It's very touchy. Mm-hmm. But this is all of that touchiness, all of that exposure is pushing.
Right.
It's a great way to
phrase it. I feel that even from early in my career to now, so 15 years-ish, mm-hmm. I see a difference.
Oh, for sure.
And and so I'm really excited to see what's going to happen the next 10 years.
Yeah.
I also see, which I think is the most encouraging indicator, people just really open to learning. Like mm-hmm. it's sensitive enough that people don't want to be targeted. They don't want to be on the wrong side of the argument or do something inadvertently that was it was a positive intention, but it came out bad. So they're educating themselves. They're learning more. And I think that the reason that quintessentially why you have workshops that are for women, men and women is proof of that.
Right.
That men are like, okay, I was not raised to know what empathy was. I was raised to say, you know, go get dirty, try again, don't feel, don't cry. And then all of a sudden I'm in the workplace and people are saying, why can't you be more vulnerable? Like, because they were never taught. They don't even know what the definition is. Mm-hmm.
Right. But I agree with you. We're all on a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest thing is when people are willing to be like, oh, well, the way I was raised might have been wrong or mm-hmm. might have at least not been the most appropriate or most open-minded. So at least just understanding that we can shift that. Just because that's how you were raised doesn't mean that's how you have to behave now.
That's just part of your story.
Yeah.
And then that's part of you being an authentic leader is saying, hey, listen, I was raised in this situation and this is the trajectory that I want my career to go. Right. So I have some growth to do.
Well, it's been some really cool stories. I just did a men's workshop and it's called Being an Ally to Women. And this man came up to me, tears in lunch. And he said, you know what I just realized? My daughter has been anorexic for 11 years. And we fought so hard to keep her alive, right? And he said, I finally understand what she needs from me. He goes, all we do is solve, solve, solve. He goes, I present solutions and solutions and solutions. He goes, she just wants me to listen to her.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm going to take a whole new approach now after 11 years because of this workshop.
Oh my gosh.
It's so revolutionary.
Right. And then I get emails. It's fascinating because I like 17 men in the group. I'll get emails from 13 of them just saying, you've changed my life. You've changed my relationship with my team. You've changed my relationship with my wife.
Right.
You've changed my relationship with my daughter.
Right.
There's all this stuff I didn't know. I caught myself interrupting women 3 times today. I'm not going to do that ever again.
Right.
Things like that. And it's so rewarding because it's just they don't know what they don't know.
They don't know. Right. I mean, we were talking about this. I was looking at your website before you guys walked in and off air. I was like, Melissa has these love deck cards that everybody should go and get.
Get the love deck.
It's so cool. Cause I mean, it's so as women, I can look at it. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so obvious. Like what? Here's an example is. There's a card that on the front, here's the scenario. The woman comes home. I had a bad day. Most guys, like in a typical scenario, they're going to be like, well, what do I need to do to fix it? Right.
And, right.
But all he really needs to do is pour you a glass of wine and say, just tell me about it.
Right.
And it's so much. It is. We just want to vent. Like we just want to Alison Armstrong. Are you familiar with Alison Armstrong? She's like a relationship coach that I sometimes listen to, but she gives this example of like, we just want to vomit in a bucket. So just hold the trash can. Like just hold out the trash can. That's all we need.
A great visual.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be no solution at the end.
No.
That's okay.
We don't want one. Maybe later when we come back and we say, help me solve this problem. That's your cue.
I got it out.
Yeah.
Now I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, and it really is like, it's life changing because it's so simple because that butting
That's
of heads
right.
is because they're mad when they offer a solution, it upsets them that we don't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just trying to help her and she's not listening. But we're like, it's not what we're asking you for.
Yeah.
But we're not being clear when we ask either.
Right.
So it's both. Right?
And vice versa, when you go to a guy and you're like, tell me exactly how you feel and
they're
this situation and more details and more feelings. And they're just like, oh, this is exhausting.
Yeah.
You know?
But coming back to Kate's point in terms of affirmative action, right? And quota systems and all these things that we're talking about to try to resolve, right? The diversity disparities and so forth. That's really a very male-oriented solution. I'm not saying that only men developed it, but I'm saying for the way corporations operate, it's a very logical solution. Well, let's just fix the numbers.
Right. Let's just hire more women.
We don't have to have these hard conversations.
Right. Yeah, check the boxes.
Right. Which end up not being that hard, actually.
Right.
It's like all I need is for you to listen.
But it's really more about like finding the best candidates. And I wanted to touch on, I think some of that too, and again, it is all conditioning from both sides. And when you mentioned that thing about looking at the criteria for a job. I can't tell you how many times I've looked at something and thought, oh God, I don't really have that thing. So I just pass it over. But the women that have been successful that have started to break that glass ceiling is because they didn't accept those
barriers or norms. Yeah.
So it's not necessarily about them being women. It's just that they thought, well, I don't have to shy away from that.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, it's what we accept. We get what we accept in every relationship.
That's right.
I think that it's a lot about confidence. I can't tell you how many women that I've talked to that say they sort of do this like man bashing thing. And they're like, and I realize you're waiting for an invitation to do something, right? Like you're never going to get the invitation. Right. As soon as you believe that that is the trajectory you want to go on and that's where you're going to go, you will. Yeah. Like it's really that simple.
Right. Yeah.
Like no one gets the invitation actually.
Right.
It's like, it's you get the invitation sort of happens in your head.
Yeah.
You know, and then you work towards it.
Give yourself the invitation.
Yeah. The permission really.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many examples, just simple examples like of things like, well, they didn't invite me to the golf outing or they didn't invite me to go for drinks with the guys after work and so forth that I feel so left out. It's like, just go for drinks.
Yeah.
Just go to the golf outing.
Right. Yeah.
They won't notice.
They
or
didn't
care
invite any of them.
Right. Showed up. Yeah. Like, well, we don't get that. So we like, you know, we go stew and drink our own wine at home and eat a bucket of ice cream and like worry about the fact that we weren't invited. But none of them were.
Yeah, right.
To your point.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I love it. I love that the shift is happening. I think it will be exciting.
It's going to be uncomfortable, but the other side of it, I think, is just really wonderful.
The best growth always happens in discomfort.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. So what do you guys have? You know, like what are your predictions for like even the next 5 years? Like, where do you think this is all going to go? That's like a blink of an eye. I know. I mean, we can't know, right? Who knows? Well, there's some other thing we haven't even heard of yet. You know?
Well, for sure. I am not Notre Dame, but I will say that for this year of Startup Week, we're focusing on a diversity and inclusion theme. Mm-hmm. And that has, being involved in that has taught me so much. I've seen, you know, there's one view and lens, which is working with companies. And then there's this other lens, which is working with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're all volunteers. And so you get to have these conversations. And so we have, I've watched our community respond to a focus on diversity and inclusion. And it has given me so much hope. Is much easier than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Many more people are hopping on board to be supportive, because I think in everyone's hearts they want that to be true. They mm-hmm. they want their communities to be diverse and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
They want the benefits of it.
Right.
The biggest lesson that I've learned about it is all you really have to do is allow it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There isn't any process document you need to follow.
Right.
We sort of declared that that's what we were going to make happen, and we allowed, and it is.
Yeah.
It's better than anything that I could have done. And so I think that and the organizations that are not trying to over-engineer it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they're just saying, we see the value in having diversity and including people, all walks of life and situation, and it's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we meet people and they have a different point of view from us, then they're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
The one, you know, sort of tricky slope there is different points of view, and then how do you also measure cultural fit, right? So that's
a good
the thing,
point,
right?
Like, right?
So you can be, there's plenty of times I've hired a bull in a china shop because the team needed it, right?
Yeah.
But you still have to make sure that they espouse the values or align to them.
Yeah.
So that is going to be hard, and you're going to need some real deep roots mm-hmm. in your organizations to absorb that.
Yeah.
But I see the majority of the people that I surround myself with are fully locked and loaded
mm-hmm.
into that mission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think technology is making it so that we have a much broader reach, and it's going to get even, you know, I mean, it's just advancing at light speed, right? I mean, it's incredible what technology is going to bring to us. So I think in 5 years, we're going to have much farther reach. But that will give us access to many more people
mm-hmm.
in the world, right? So we're going to be interacting more and more across the nation, across the world. And all of that interaction, while supported by technology, we're going to really need to be able to dial in. We're going to have to be good at listening. We're going to have to be good at navigating non-native speaking, whatever language we're non-natively speaking, right?
Right.
And it will require this empathy and this compassion and all of these skills. And it's funny because some people have been saying, well, Melissa, aren't you kind of worried that you're going to become obsolete because everyone's going to go to like webinars and technology and everything's going to be automated? And I'm like, well, there's still human beings and we're going to need to. In fact,
still
I think
human beings.
I'm going to get busier.
I think you are too. And then you just spurred a thought too that, you know, as we become more virtual teams.
That's right.
And learning how to communicate and have empathy when I'm not even looking at you. Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't get any nonverbals.
Right.
I don't
get it. It takes a whole lot away. And so learning how to approach people when, because I mean, how many times have you gotten an email or a text message where if you're in a bad mood, when you read it, you hear one thing.
That's right.
And you go back, you know, an hour later when whatever was bugging you was gone and you read it and you're like, oh, they weren't mad at all.
Yeah.
It's totally your interpretation.
That's actually the course I just developed for this new client in Seattle that I have is all on dispersed teams. And how do we do that successfully? Because they're starting to get bigger and bigger and actually start to go global. So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
a really important
topic. I don't think most people really put the appropriate value on nonverbal. Like when you're used to working yes. around people and you can say, oh, you lift your eyebrow. Like what's yeah. happening? Are you cool? You know, and you,
right.
you have...
It's like 90%.
Yeah. But when you don't see that, then you just don't have it.
Right.
I think, and I would challenge any leaders and anybody that strives to be a leader in a company to really understand where your conscious and unconscious biases land. Some people, it's super superficial, like where do they go to college? Others are much deep rooted. It's part mm-hmm. of your story and mm-hmm. you should know it because it will pop up routinely. So when you have some kind of cultural or diversity come across your desk, what's your response? And understand it and try to get to the roots of it. Because that is really going to be, I think, in the future, a direct mm-hmm. tie to success.
Yeah. Yeah. God, it's so interesting. I feel like now my mind is just spinning. Because that diversity piece too, you know, a lot of times we do think of it in terms of ethnicity or gender or the obvious things, then there's just the personality quirks and things like that. But mm-hmm. when you remove that face-to-face interaction, how does that change? Like, what if I'm working with somebody where I have no idea what mm-hmm. their background
Which
is?
Which happens all the time.
Right,
yeah.
right. So you're not even bringing that bias in if you had one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's so...
I think the simplest thing, it's simple and difficult at the same time, is to just remember that we're all human.
Mm-hmm.
That the race actually doesn't really matter.
Right.
That their name doesn't say anything about them. Like,
right.
making the assumptions are always dangerous. And judging things as right or wrong usually doesn't serve you
That's
when
right.
it comes to
right.
people. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking to someone and they have a name that looks sort of like a certain ethnic background, they could just look like you and their parents like that name. And,
yeah.
you know, and what? How would you treat them differently? What limitations mm-hmm. would you put on the relationship
right.
just because of something in your head? Again, here comes right. some of the head trash again, right?
Right.
So I think, and I work on this myself, we don't know.
Right.
Like, that it's not a conscious thing.
Right.
But the closer you are to aligning yourself with just, they're human beings, no right mm-hmm. or wrong, no judgments. It's just an opportunity.
Right.
Right.
Well, we're human beings. We need to recognize that. But at the same time, we're human beings. We're all flawed.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
you
sure, know? Right, sure. Of course. And we're programmed to categorize and discriminate. And right?
Well, it's kind of primal survival
yeah.
instincts.
That's
and,
right.
you know, that kind of we have never let go of, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had to have that back mm-hmm. in the day. You had
yeah.
to be able to quickly assess, like, threat or not threat,
mm-hmm.
you
yes.
know? And so that stuff, it just, sometimes you can't really help it. I think, you know, there is a movement, and granted, I'm a yoga teacher too, and it's who I survive, you know, surround myself with. And in our first conversation, Kate, we immediately clicked on all this, like, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, higher being stuff. And I think that movement is growing, and I think it's seeping mm-hmm. into the workplace in a more acceptable way, which I think is an amazing shift.
Mm-hmm.
Organizations like Conscious Capitalism that we mm-hmm. are all familiar with, they're one of our sponsors here for the studio, but they are really promoting some of that as well, like business as a force for good and really understanding your impact in every area of where you do business, that you're having a positive impact. It's mm-hmm. not just about making money and bulldozing trees to mm-hmm. make more money, or, you know, wreaking every little ounce of energy out of your staff. It's mm-hmm. it's about creating something that's good.
And I think that's what companies are more and more understanding, which is great, is that they're part of a community, particularly
right.
as they expand globally. It's not just I'm this in this
and
office
you need that
tower,
community.
Right.
Yes.
In the middle of Singapore with all these other offices, right? But that I'm actually part of this community mm-hmm. that I'm operating in now.
Yeah.
And how do I best serve it?
Right, right. Right. And all that technology that's on some level disconnecting us, I think, is creating mm-hmm. that craving for connection
yeah.
again.
Mm-hmm. There's also a certain amount of obligation, I think, when you're part of a community to do good,
yeah.
right? To exactly what you're saying, Deb. And I just encourage people to look at other people as opportunities, right? Yeah. Like, why is this person in front of you? Why did you meet them? Mm-hmm. What is your goal here? Mm-hmm. And I think that that can, and when all sort of fails, just being open to that opportunity. Yeah. This is in front of you. Why?
Right.
You know,
I love that.
And
right.
learn how to learn
right
from that.
Right. Yeah. We're all going to make the world a better place.
Kumbaya.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We're going to chant a little om on our way out.
Namaste. Right.
Believe it or not, guys, we are almost at the top of the hour.
Wow.
We said before we started, we're like, this is going to go by super fast. So I want to just give everyone an opportunity to hear how they can learn more about both of your companies, where to find you. I know you're both on LinkedIn. Melissa, your website is Lamson Consulting LLC.
Mm-hmm. So okay. lamsonconsulting.com.
Yep. Okay. Okay, so not the LLC on the web address.
Correct.
Okay. And it's Lamson.
Correct.
Consulting.com. Mm-hmm. You are on LinkedIn, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Any events or workshops or anything you want to let people know about? Anything coming up?
Open events, not. But all my books are on Amazon. So if you would also awesome. Check out my author page on Amazon if they're interested too.
Yeah, yeah. Your brand new one definitely sounds good. And I know you had how many titles?
I think it's 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I should so probably know.
Do you sleep?
it's good. It's good.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. And then Kate, where can people find you on CoVibe?
CoVibe.co. I'm also on LinkedIn, and you can find me at Startup Week in
yeah,
March.
Phoenix Startup Week. Mm-hmm. Let's give a little plug to Startup Week. So it is when? March?
March 4th.
Okay.
Yep. The week of March 4th. And
events all over Phoenix.
Yep. We'll have 3 base camps as it's looking now, but phxstartupweek.com.
People need tickets?
They will. They will. Okay. There's lots of new stuff we're trying out this year. And so subscribe and don't miss it. It's the largest entrepreneur event in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know it's like tons of different tracks and
yes.
you can just come for a day, come for yep. one session. Yep. You don't have to attend the whole week.
Yep.
Just participate in whatever you feel like participating
right.
in. And I know I have taken part in it before. There really is something for everybody. I don't think it is just startups, you know,
yeah.
there's always something to
that's
learn.
That's the intention.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, we're very real about the idea of we're not just for startups. It is in the title. We're also not just for tech companies, even
right.
though Techstars is a founder of ours, mm-hmm. Is a supporter of ours. We want it to be an inclusive event
right.
Where we have a big tent and a long table and you're welcome.
Yeah. And you are still taking speaker submissions, right?
I don't know
if we'll have this. This may or may not be published before the end of this weekend, but I know if we get it out in the next couple of days, you might have a couple of days to submit to speak.
Yeah. Do speak. Yeah. Yep. Do that. Workshops, speaking. And if for some reason you missed the deadline, you can always email us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. Phoenix Startup Week. All right.
Thank you.
Well, this has been an amazing episode of Culture Crush RX. I'm your host, Deb Karen with Anahata Marketing. Very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. Hitting your airwaves in partnership with Mach6 and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. And as always, I hope that you have at the very least been entertained, but learned some valuable tidbits that you can take away and make your team perform a little bit better. So until next time.